pretty much everyone here, so let's get underway. My name's Jonathan Curtis. I'm Assistant Secretary, Research Branch, here in the Library, for those who haven't met me. Welcome to this morning's Parliamentary Library Lecture, and thanks for coming. Today's lecture, of course, is on the Australian labour market and unpacking the Australian Bureau of Statistics on the labour market. I think one of the key issues of concern for parliaments is employment, unemployment, underemployment, underutilisation, all those sorts of things is one of the key policy challenges that we face. And with the transitions in the economy, this continues to be an interesting and moving feast. And understanding the numbers and the statistics behind it is a critical starting point for any serious analysis. So on that basis, we've got this morning Bjorn Jarvis, the head of the Labour Statistics Program at the ABS. This is the program that's responsible for more than 50 releases on the ABS website each year. Seems like a busy publishing program. Bjorn has over 15 years' experience in grappling with official statistics and is one of Australia's leading experts, I'm told, in the field of labour market statistics. So please join me in welcoming Bjorn. I think we'll go for about 30 minutes-ish. Yep. And then we'll have questions in the usual way.
Fantastic. Thanks for that introduction, Jonathan. So I'd like to start by acknowledging the Ngunnawal people, the traditional custodians of the lands that we're meeting on today, and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and also acknowledge members of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community and peoples who may be attending the seminar today. I'll start by saying a big thank you to the Parliamentary Library for providing this opportunity. As someone who has worked extensively over the years in labour statistics and population statistics, I like nothing better than having the opportunity to talk at length about labour statistics, and in particular some of the new statistics and some of the new products that have been developed that even relatively experienced users of labour statistics may or may not be aware of. So a big thank you for the opportunity today, and it is great to see a range of familiar faces in the audience today and also some new faces. So as Jonathan mentioned, we'll go through a kind of slide show and then have plenty of time for questions and answers. But the focus today is very much around unpacking labour statistics. For some people who are relatively new to labour statistics, hopefully it gives you a good entry point into labour statistics and all of the work that the ABS does in order to measure the labour market, which is not only important for economic reasons, for social reasons, giving insights into the population. The labour market and labour policies, labour politics, the labour movement have always been very intrinsically central to Australian politics and Australian democracy. So that's part of the reason for why the Bureau has traditionally done a lot in measuring the labour market, and why there is so much of a focus around high-quality, frequent observations about what's happening in the labour market. For anyone who has experience in this space, you will get some insights into a bit of a deep dive into some of the new parts of the Labour Statistics Program. So in particular, the work we've been doing around administrative data, and we'll show some really exciting regional profiles that new data supports, and also the labour account. So don't feel that you need to kind of, squint your eyes and read what's on there. So in addition to kind of sharing these slides, we've got hyperlinks in there so that you can actually click on them and dive into the releases. I've put them up here to actually just give you that kind of visual illustration of what Jonathan touched on. There's a lot of information that we produce. Some of these are monthly, some of them are quarterly, some of them are twice a year, some of them are annually, some of them are less frequent than that. But we actually have a very comprehensive set of labour-related statistics. So my branch is responsible for around 50 to 60 releases a year, but if you were to include all of the statistics that we have with a labour flavour, then it's probably something in the realm of 75 plus releases a year. You'll also see that I've split this into four segments, which will become important as we start talking about understanding and kind of unpacking the latest statistics that the ABS produces. So you can see there's a box there around household surveys, a box around business surveys, a box around administrative data, and the labour account. So in essence, those four boxes comprise what we describe as four pillars, and the pillars are different collection types. So we have household survey statistics, so that's very much the labour force survey and surveys that we run in conjunction with the labour force survey, where we're collecting information directly from people in the population around what they're doing, what they're trying to do, what their aspirations are, what their experiences are. Business survey statistics, so surveys that we collect information directly from employers. We have administrative data statistics, so anyone who's familiar with the new Jobs in Australia and the similarly branded personal income in Australia, that those are collections that are based on administrative data. They are relatively new, so the first two are long-standing, so we've been doing the labour force survey since November 1960, so it's coming up to its 60th anniversary. We've actually been running a range of other kind of household collections before that, but labour force is continuous for that 60-year period. The business surveys we've been running for well over 100 years. So a good example would be the industrial disputes collection that goes back to 1913 from memory. The admin data is very much something that has only come out in the last couple of years. And in addition, we also have a labour account, which is basically a version of the national accounts for the labour market and just describing the labour market. Once again, that's also relatively new, something that we've added to the program in the last few years. There's a lot of text up here. I've included that so that if you want to go through and kind of read through this slide with a bit more kind of focus, it's intended to give you a bit of a sense of those four different pillars that we have within labour statistics. What are their relative strengths and weaknesses? And we'll kind of unpack that with a few examples in the coming slides. So why do we run household surveys? Well, we run household surveys because they're a very efficient, very cost-effective way of getting information about what the population's doing, from which you can produce statistics that are all-encompassing of the entire population very quickly. So a good example will be looking at just the headline labour force estimates that came out last week. So that was January information that was released in the third week of February. So it's incredibly timely, but also enables us to ask questions directly of people rather than just kind of observing what's happening in the labour market at a very high level. You can ask very specific questions, so you can get into detailed information about what people are doing, but also detailed information about their characteristics. So why do we run business surveys? Well, there's some information that you can get from people in the labour market that provides important insights into how the labour market's changing, how the labour market is operating. But there's also some information that is much better to go to get directly from businesses, and some information from businesses that businesses don't actually naturally provide to government. So a good example would be something like job vacancies. So we run a quarterly survey where we directly contact around 5,500 businesses each quarter to find out not how many job ads did they have or how many ads appeared on their website, but how many vacancies did they actually have available to fill that they'd undertaken any form of recruitment activity. And so that's something that actually a business survey is really best placed to provide that information on. In terms of the two new pillars, where are some of their relative strengths? So administrative data, for anyone who kind of thinks about administrative data, that's data that's been collected and compiled as an administrative byproduct. So a good example in our space will be the vast majority of the population submit a tax return. So that tax return actually has really useful, insightful information about what each person in the population who is employed was doing in terms of how much they earned. Characteristics of their job, and also providing insights into where they live, who they live with, who they work for. So the administrative data is incredibly powerful because it provides a very comprehensive view of what's happening in the labour market. So if you think of tax returns, you've got information for just about everyone in the population each year. So those payment summaries that feed through to the tax office in each of your pay cycles, whether it's on a weekly basis or a fortnightly basis or a monthly basis, that is feeding through a steady stream of information to the tax office. The challenge with administrative data is you only get insights into labour market based on the information that government can actually get through that. So a good example will be tax data gives you some really useful insights, but you don't actually have any information on the hours that people are working, so you can't get to are people working full-time or part-time. You can't get a sense of, you know, are people paid, you know, as permanent employees or temporary employees, or are they working on a casual basis or not on a casual basis. So for the information that you do have administrative data for, it enables you to do incredibly detailed analysis. So as I put up there, the 6 years of data that we've got in jobs in Australia, there's more than 100 million job records. So you've got information for all the people, for all the employing businesses. We've also got 100 million job records. And so from that, you can actually look at the jobs that people are doing, how many of those jobs have been done in parallel. So understanding not only people who are multiple job holders, but what's the combination of jobs that they're doing. And so because you've got that comprehensive information, you can actually then drill down into regions, and we'll show you a regional profile a little bit later on. You can also look at specific industries. So all of those traditional challenges that you have with those traditional pillars of survey data, you don't have with administrative data, because you're not drawing on small samples, you're drawing on a comprehensive stock of information that you have from across the labour market. So yeah, the example I was going to tease out in the industry space is if you want to specifically know not just who's working in healthcare and social assistance, where aged care is, at an industry division level or a subdivision level or a group level, but you actually want to hone in and say, no, I'm interested in specifically how many people are working in just aged care, which is the four-digit level of the industry classification, so what we refer to as an industry class. Labour force doesn't have that information, business surveys don't have big enough samples to be able to drill down into that, but Jobs in Australia and that administrative data does enable you to actually look at that and look at how that's changing year after year. So those are kind of three data source pillars. The fourth one that we've got is a kind of cross-cutting one. So the labour account, as I mentioned before, in simple terms, it's like the national accounts but for the labour market. So it takes all of these bits of information, the same way the national accounts takes all these bits of information about the macroeconomy and then kind of balances them together to tell a coherent story around what's happening across the economy. The labour account enables us to do that, looking at labour market information. So all of that rich information, that very detailed information, all of that disparate information that was on that earlier slide in those four boxes, we take all of that information and basically compile, reconcile and balance it together. So this, so if anyone is doing any analysis that's looking at things like industry or public or private sector or the number of total jobs in the economy or vacant jobs in the economy as a proportion of total jobs, any of those macro level measures, this labour account actually gives you not only better insights into some things that traditionally you would have maybe sourced from the labour force, but also new insights that are only possible by actually reconciling all that information together. And we will do a little bit of a deep dive into that. So data on the same topic. So one of the key questions will be, all right, you've got four pillars. You've got all of these different data sources. How do I navigate through to work out exactly which pillar is going to provide the kind of entry points of kind of answering my question? So we have four pillars intentionally, and that's because each of them have different strengths and weaknesses, and together they actually provide a really important, robust and complementary information base for understanding the current labour market, the historical labour market, but also helping to forecast and predict what the future labour market may look like. So if you're interested in looking at demographic characteristics or specific information that only people can really provide insights into, that's where you've got the labour force survey and those household survey statistics. If it's information that really you can only get from payroll, financial or HR systems, that's where the business surveys are most useful. If it's about drilling down into detailed regional analysis or subpopulations or very specific industry groups or age cohorts, then that's where the administrative data is useful. We've also said that the 5-yearly census, so the census data also includes a lot of labour market information. The beauty of the administrative data is you actually have this on an annual basis. So there's some subpopulation, small area stuff that you still will need to go to the census for, but a lot of it we're increasingly being able to get from administrative data, which is really good. Really good if you just think about an example of someone who wanted to do some regional labour market analysis around a drought. It's very difficult to do regional labour market analysis around the drought if that drought doesn't coincide with a year ending in 6 or a year ending in 1. It's also really hard to do detailed subpopulation analysis for something like the global financial crisis that occurred in 2008-09, which was like almost perfectly right in the middle of that intercensal period. As with a lot of these things, it's often using the comparative and relative strengths that you have of these different data sources. So it's been really good to see people using the administrative data in conjunction with the census data in order to draw the strengths of both of those. And then the last one, so if you are looking at a comprehensive best estimate of some of these key labour market indicators, particularly looking at industry and sector, but also just kind of total labour market and total economy information, then the labour account is definitely what you should be looking at. We've got a couple of examples here where we do have similar information across those pillars. So a good example would be jobs. So if you're looking at jobs, the monthly labour force is really designed to measure employment. Now, the vast majority of people who are employed only do work in one job. So generally, it's around kind of 5 to 6% of people who are employed who are multiple job holders. But technically, it's not providing a job level total. But you do get some insights into jobs by looking at employment, looking at the characteristics of the jobs that people are doing in their working arrangements. The labour account does give us a pure jobs measure, so the labour account does have information through a person perspective and a person lens, but does actually have pure jobs-based measures. So if you want to understand not what's happening with the number of employed people in the labour market, but if you want to try to get a sense of how many jobs have been created in net terms, then the quarterly labour account actually gives you a very specific measure for that. And then the last one, jobs in Australia. So using that annual administrative data and the payment summary data that we get on a regular basis, we can actually get to detailed information and detailed stock set of information to actually understand jobs that are being worked across Australia. And certainly, if you're looking to do not kind of, aggregate level analysis, but you wanted to do micro data analysis around jobs, then that's a really rich and really useful data source. Employee earnings is probably even more of an extreme example of where you have lots of different information. So we have a wage price index, we have average weekly earnings, so wage price index each quarter, average weekly earnings twice a year, employee earnings and hours every 2 years, characteristics of employment. So sorry, those first three are taken from business-based collections. Characteristics of employment, so that's an annual household-based survey that's run off the back of the labour force survey. You have a quarterly compensation of employees measure in the national accounts, and also a quarterly measure of labour income in the labour account. So each of these will actually, and I won't go through the detail on the slide there, but I definitely encourage everyone to have a look at it, and certainly for those of you in the room, this example is actually in that handout that you've got, the multi-page handout. You can actually see that there are different questions that you would have if you were trying to understand earnings and wages, and each of them will provide different insights and different complementary insights. So there isn't one data source, there's intentionally multiple data sources, and those multiple data sources will enable you to answer questions in different ways. So a good example would be, if I just take the first two that were most recently released, so the quarterly wage price index, the last data was released last Wednesday. Average weekly earnings that came out last Thursday. We had a very much like a deluge of major labour market information last Wednesday and Thursday, given labour force was also released, as well as characteristics of businesses. So wage price index is a price-based measure. So if you're wanting to understand wage growth and kind of wage price pressure, then that's the data source. If you're trying to understand what the average earnings are. So a measure that actually does reflect compositional change that's occurring over time, then average weekly earnings gives you that compositional insight. So you've got a price-based measure, you've got average weekly earnings that gives you a compositional insight, and an insight into compositional changes in earnings that are changing over time. So for instance, that's one of the data sources, along with employee earnings and hours, that will provide insights into the gender pay gap. All right, in terms of these new statistics, so jobs in Australia. So jobs in Australia is an annual publication, an annual release that we have that's providing summary information from out of the administrative data. So in addition to having some headline commentary and some summary Excel spreadsheets, there's also a table builder product for jobs in Australia. So if you do want to... we do have some regional profiles that are ready to go. So you've got local government profiles, we've got statistical area 2, 3, 4 that are available. Parliamentary Library also has Commonwealth electorate divisions, so you've got a profile for each of those. But if you do want to produce your own detailed summary pieces of information about what's changing in the Australian labour market over time, then the Table Builder product really enables you to kind of slice and dice that to your heart's content. So the administrative data, so it's essentially tax data, but it's comprised three integrated administrative data sets. So it's administrative data that is comprised of a person-level file, a job-level file, and an employer-level file. So we have some products that actually bring all of these together, but if you are interested in doing analysis, we also have each of these files available within the ABS data lab for you to actually go and do detailed analysis. Most of the interest is looking at the person file and the job file, given a lot of the business file stuff is going to provide similar insights to what you could get doing BLADE analysis. So BLADE is the Business Longitudinal Analytical Data Environment. But the person file and the job file really provide very detailed insights into the labour market status and changes of people in the Australian labour market, and then jobs, insights into the jobs, and also the phasing of those jobs. Okay, so you do have examples, or an example of this printed out as a handout. So within the Jobs in Australia release, just to help, because this is so new, we did develop some regional profiles to help provide a bit of a dashboard view of what are some of the things that this data can provide insights into. And so that's basically the two-page profile. And we put in these slides Bunbury, so the local government area of Bunbury, under the microscope, just to give you an idea of some of the key insights that you can get into looking at some of these regional labour markets through this administrative data. So you can see, the number of jobs in the most recent year's worth of data, those split according to public and private, the employment size, males, females, the different employment types, multiple job holders, single job holders, the average age of employed persons. You can look over the six-year data set, so looking at change over that kind of five-year interval in total jobs, but also employed persons. You can look at median employment income and how that's changing. By default, it provides that regional comparison with the state and territory that the region's within, so you can see the distribution of employment across the industries for Bunbury compared to Western Australia as a whole. I've also just whacked in Karratha as a kind of more extreme example, given you can see, mining on the second industry from the left there being a much more pronounced blue spike, and the admin support services, part of which are providing support to the mining industry. You can see the age and sex, so looking at jobs by age and sex, for people that are living in Bunbury by sex, so males and females. These are just kind of illustrations of what you could do. So you could look at, instead of age and sex, you could look at age and sex and comparing Bunbury to WA, or you could compare age and how that compares to WA, or to, you know, the rest of WA, or comparing it to Perth, or comparing it to a neighbouring local government area. So by default, we've got a male-female comparison looking at occupations by sex. So you can see, looking at Bunbury here, you know, the concentration or the relative concentration of male and female workers in some of these more traditionally male occupations, and, you know, more traditionally female occupations. So you can do some very detailed analysis of that. And so that just gives you a bit of a flavour for, like, if you are looking to take a bit of a deep dive into a particular area, being able to draw on the administrative data, you don't run into some of those conversations about, okay, well, this is only the fraction of a fraction of a survey sample. So this is comprehensive administrative data. Now, one of the drawbacks with administrative data is it is lagged generally, and it, because it's dependent on particular administrative processes, and those administrative processes don't tend to be as live and dynamic as what you could get by actually running a dedicated statistical collection. And so the most recent data that we've got here is for 16-17, so 17-18 data will be coming out in the coming months. But because you've got that detailed information, so if you're looking at something like this, it's not too difficult to say, well, this is actually how the labour market in Bunbury has been trending in recent years. So you don't have to worry about the sampling variability of things bouncing around. So it does still give you a reasonable jumping off point for actually saying what's actually happening within the labour market in terms of people that are living in Bunbury. Doesn't give you that same contemporary view, but it's a near view of what's currently happening. All right, the next new thing is the labour account. So we've been releasing a labour account since 2017. We are only one of four countries to actually have a labour account. So we are very fortunate as a country because we do have so much information on the labour market that, you know, it's possible to do a labour account, and also there's enough demand for understanding and measuring the labour market that there's a really good imperative for actually investing in setting up a labour account. So the other countries are the Netherlands, Denmark and Switzerland. So our framework is the most comprehensive of those four, and we've also systematised it in a way that it now comes out within a week of the national accounts. So generally the national accounts will come out on a Wednesday, or always comes out on a Wednesday, and the labour account will come out the following Tuesday. And just recently we've extended the time period that the labour account covers right back to the mid-1990s, and that's in order to support the key productivity statistics that begin in the mid-1990s. So the labour account, in addition to providing new insights and complementary insights, it does provide better industry estimates than what we have in the other data sources, particularly labour force, and better sector estimates. And so because we get better industry estimates, it means that the input of hours into productivity statistics will actually give us much more robust productivity statistics. Now, we haven't implemented that in our productivity statistics program yet, but it is something that we'll be doing the next time we do our historical revisions for our productivity statistics, which, from memory, are late next year. Yep. So late 2021. Okay, so the four quadrants of the labour account. So there's a job quadrant, there's a person or a people-based quadrant, there's time or an hours-based quadrant, and then there's kind of income and labour costs. So it's described as quadrants because they each provide a very specific set of insights, but they're all also perfectly internally consistent. So the jobs-based information that we balance there will then further inform how we balance and reconcile information in those other quadrants to actually tell a very joined up coherent picture and coherent narrative of what's happening in the Australian labour market. We do appreciate that this is probably one of the, of the new things that we're doing, this is probably one of the newest of the new, and one of maybe the, I won't say the more complex, because if you actually dive in and look at the data, the products are relatively intuitive, but we do have quite an extensive amount of explanatory information to help people understand how you produce the labour account, how you can use the labour account, and the value of the labour account. So certainly in a number of the recent releases of the Labor Account, we've had some articles that have been doing a bit of a spotlight on industries of interest, some spotlights looking at things like multiple job holding and some of these kind of new macro measures. So if you do want to get, you know, if you're a bit worried about how cold the water in the pool is going to be, there's a couple of really nice safe ledgers that we've put at the edge that you can just kind of dip your toe in just to kind of understand you know, why this is useful and why it's important for us to have. So how's it produced? I basically gave you the summary there. So we take all of the information that we have on the labour market, a lot of the information that we have from the labour force and our household survey-based statistics, and those business surveys, together with information from the administrative data, we reconcile it together to give us the best sense of jobs in the Australian labour market, and then we use that information to in turn balance out and ensure that you've got high quality estimates of people, the hours that are being worked, as well as the labour income and labour costs. Importantly, we do make allowances within the labour account for some of the scope differences. So for those of you that are experienced using labour force data, you'll know that we're producing statistics for the usually resident civilian population aged 15 years and over. Now, there are people who work in the Australian labour market who aren't usually resident or 15 years and over or in the civilian population, and so the labour account does actually make adjustments that takes into account all the people who are actually contributing to labour market activity. For instance, you know, the contribution of 14-year-olds who are working, as well as temporary residents. So that is one particular strength of being able to do something like a labour account. It's not practical for us to go out and directly survey people in that population. So it's difficult to reach particular groups. It would also be incredibly cost prohibitive to then be collecting information for an entire extra group of people. But actually drawing on all the different information that we've got, some of them labour statistics specific, some of them administrative data, means that we can actually produce a much more comprehensive estimate of total activity within the labour market. So we developed it to help people reconcile bits of information about the labour market, understanding some of the differences around industry. So the labour account does give us the ability to have the best industry estimates. So in the past, where people have been saying, oh, okay, so how many people work in coal mining? Well, some data sources will say there's 50,000 people. Some data sources will say 70,000. Where do you go to get the best number? You go to the labour account, because it's taking all of that information and what we know about how people report industry in these different data sources to actually bring it together as the best estimate. I've talked about productivity statistics and I've talked about it does actually give a pure job measure. So if someone wants to actually say how many jobs are there, how many extra jobs were created, then you've got a one-stop shop in the labour account. I won't go through the next couple of slides in any detail other than the Reserve Bank in their quarterly statement on monetary policy had a dedicated box on the labour account. So if you don't want to hear from the ABS about why the labour account's useful, but you want to hear from the Reserve Bank about why they're shifting a lot of their focus, particularly industry and sector analysis, to using the labour account, then you've got some words from the RBA. And just to give you a kind of, on the next slide, the kind of visual illustration of why does it provide a better insight, the RBA in that box provided a couple of kind of illustrative examples. So you can see the labour force survey estimates in red, the labour account in I'm total colourblind, so blue/purple/not red. So you can see for something like healthcare and social assistance, the way that people respond in the labour force survey is going to be pretty close to what we'd see in just about every collection. So it's very straightforward, or it's much more straightforward for the people when they're describing who they work for and the activities of those businesses, for it to be coded as healthcare and social assistance. Whereas for something like manufacturing, you can see there's a bit of a difference, and the difference you can see there, if you were trying to talk about what's happening at this particular point, at the end of 2018, and they were looking at what's happening kind of through the year, It's a very different story that you get from those two different data sources. The labour force would suggest manufacturing is undergoing a bit of a recovery, and actually quite a substantial recovery, whereas with the labour account you say, well, it's a slight recovery, but it's still around its kind of recent kind of historical low. So for people in responding to the labour force survey, because we can't get very specific information, and we're also talking about people describing what the business is doing from their vantage point, all it takes is a number of people to be working in particular industries that are maybe connected to manufacturing, so they're within the supply chain for manufacturing, or they're in businesses that may do a bit of manufacturing, but they're not primarily in manufacturing, but their job feels more like a manufacturing job, and you suddenly get quite a different story. So, and admin and support is probably the most extreme example of that. So admin and support, one of the key elements of admin support is labour hire firms. So a lot of people who are actually working for labour hire firms in the labour force survey won't actually describe that they're working with labour hire firms. They'll often say, I'm working in mining, I'm working for BHP. Well, technically, they're not employed by BHP, they're employed by a particular labour hire firm that is contracting out work to BHP. And I'm not BHP just being kind of illustrated example in the mining space. So the labour account can actually take into account and adjust for that. So we think about productivity statistics. This becomes really important if you think of how do you go about measuring the productivity of the admin support industry. Well, if all of your production-based measures are on a much more like the blue-purple line, but your hours measures are much more like the red line, it's going to dramatically overstate or understate productivity depending on what the relationship is. Jeff, did you have a question?
Just on that labour hire point, is it possible to get from the labour account data on the labour hire industry, how significant it is, and compare that with the labour force estimates?
So this is at the industry division level, so you've got labour account information down to the subdivision level, and you can also then overlay it with, in our characteristics of employment survey, we actually specifically ask direct questions about people being paid by labour hire firms. So you do have a number of different data sources where you can actually look to unpack that particular industry. All right, a couple of quick topics in focus. So underemployment, I'm sure a lot of you in the room are already all over the fact that we now have monthly trend and seasonal adjusted estimates for, we've obviously had the unemployment rate for a very long period of time. We also have it for the underemployment rate, so underemployment being people who are currently working, would prefer to work more hours and are available to work more hours, and then together the underemployed population and the unemployed population give us the underutilised population and that underutilisation rate. One of the fascinating things if we're looking at the Australian labour market is we have, so at the start of the new millennium, we did see the switchover where the underemployment rate was higher than the unemployment rate, and that's kind of persisted. And something that you will see labour economists comment on periodically is this almost kind of step change. As the economy goes into an economic downturn, it never really, in terms of underemployment, it does kind of drop back slightly, but then kind of steps up through. So this is really important for understanding spare capacity through how many people do have the potential to work extra hours. So you've got the unemployed population who are fully underutilised, the underemployed population who are partially underutilised, and obviously not just the economic, but also the social ramifications of underemployment. But Jeff asked me to give a bit of a plug. This looks at people. The ABS also has what are referred to as volume measures of labour underutilisation. That sounds like an incredibly long-winded title, but it's basically where the unemployment rate is looking at what is the percentage of the labour force who are unemployed. The volume measures look at that same measure, but on an hours basis. So what are the hours that are being sought that could be worked by the unemployed population as a percentage of the total hours that are being worked in the labour force and the potential hours that are being worked in the labour force? So it means you can actually look through an hour's lens. So the top two lines are the underemployment rate that we just saw, just looking at the last 5 years of... the volume measures are quarterly, so it just goes up to the most recent quarter data for November 2019. So you've got the trend underemployment rate and the trend unemployment rate. The other two are original, so I'll just put in some basic kind of trend lines there. But the fascinating story that it tells is, as you would expect, the top blue line being the person measure for underemployment, the bottom light blue measure being the hours equivalent, you can see that they kind of broadly track together, and the red and the orange are the person-based measure and the hours-based measure, and they also kind of track together. But the interesting thing, if you just look at the relationship between the two blue and the red and the orange, is, well, that if you're looking at it on a person basis, there's about 8.5% of people in the labour force who are underemployed. If you're looking at it through an hours lens, it's about 3% of the hours that could potentially be worked in the labour force are currently underemployed and sitting with the underemployed population. So this is where it's important, and the Reserve Bank will, when they're looking at underemployment, try to make sure that people are actually looking at through both of these lenses, because if we go back to that earlier slide, it's easy to overstate the impact that underemployment has on the labour market, to say, wow, like the underemployed population is so much bigger, that needs to be of much greater policy importance and macroeconomic oversight than the unemployed population, who are now a relatively small population compared to the underemployed. Whereas this shows, if you're actually talking about from a pure economic perspective, the hours that are spare capacity in the labour market, there are still more hours, more potential hours that the unemployed population have in aggregate than the underemployed. So, you know, the difference here between, you know, 3.1% and 3.8%. The other interesting thing when you look at a graph like this is just, and it's kind of echoed in that earlier graph, of just how little change there has been over that 5 year period in terms of both the headcount measure of underemployment and the hours. So it is 3.1%. 5 years ago, it was around that. Whereas over that same period of time, the hours based capacity that the unemployed population had was around 5%, and has dropped below 4% in the same way that we had a bit over 6% of the labour force unemployed, and it's now hovering closer to 5%. There is a body of material up on the ABS website, so if you do search for volume measures of labour underutilisation, there's some really good articles that help to kind of explain and unpack those as a concept, but it was definitely something Jeff was keen for us to cover off on today. It's also one of the graphs that I like talking about the most. It definitely ticked both of those boxes. All right, the next one, 1 hour a week. I never take any or miss any opportunity to flag in our labour force release with January data last year. We did a bit of a topic in focus spotlight on 1 hour a week. It is something that gets a lot of media attention. We do it for the very long-standing reasons of it needs to be a suitably low threshold so that we're actually picking up everyone who's contributing to paid production activities within the economy. It's consistent with international guidelines and what most countries around the world do. But if we were to say how many people are working 1 hour a week, if we look at people who are usually working 1 hour a week, it's about 15,000 people. So about 0.1% of total employment. If we're to combine and so look at people who are working 2 to 3 hours a week, that's about 0.7. So 1 to 3 hours a week, we're still talking about less than 1% of the total employed population. 4 to 6 hours, we're talking about 2% of employment. So if we were to say people working 1 to 6 hours a week, it's still under 3% of total employment. I mean, the reality is you could basically combine people up to people working 19 hours a day, which is getting close to 3 days, and you are still talking about a relatively small share of employment. So the reason for putting this out is it's very easy for people to go, oh, well, you know, there are this many employed people. Well, they include people working 1 hour a week, so this is all just like fantasy statistics. No, we include 1 hour for very specific reasons, and actually those particular groups are quite small and do make very little difference to the overall numbers. So to give you an idea, if we were to abandon 60 years of good, sound thinking and just go with a different threshold. It went from 1 hour a week. The estimate of employment that we would have had on average in 2018, it would have gone from 12.6 million with a 4 hour threshold, 12.5 million, even if you went 7 hours, so basically a day, has been your threshold, a day or more of work using the code. 7 hours as a proxy for a day, you would still have 12.2 million people. So your employment to population ratio would still be 62.2% employed, 61.7% of the population employed, 60.4% of the population employed.
But we'll leave a bit of time for
questions. Yeah, I'm just about to wrap up on this one. The other key thing to note is the vast majority of people who are working relatively few hours don't actually prefer to work more hours or aren't available to work those extra hours. And this is almost one of the more surprising statistics of all of this. So those people who are working 1 hour a week, only just under a third of them are underemployed. So that's slightly higher for people 2 to 3 hours. You can see 4 to 6 and 7 to 9 hours. But it's around the kind of 30 to 35% mark. So the inverse of that is basically saying that around two-thirds of people working who usually work these hours aren't underemployed. So before I wrap up, I was just going to flag there's a new website coming. So we've got a link up here to some new beta content for the website that we're hoping to launch in the coming months. So there's a mock-up of what the labour force release will look like in the new website. You can't read the stuff on the screen, but the fact that there are sexier-looking graphs should hopefully be a bit of comfort to people who have kind of used to the kind of limitations of our current website. We've also intentionally worked towards a format where there's more information that is simpler, easier to digest, but also to more easily repurpose. So you'll see in the top right-hand corner there's a little blue box there. For every graph and table on the new website, there'll actually be a download graph or download table box where you can actually spit it out directly into a CSV file or Excel. And there'll also be a tab on the left there that actually enables you to bounce backwards and forwards between a graph and a table. So it should enable you to do more of that kind of interactive use of the website without having to jump out of that into some other product. We also have a key labour market indicators page, which is a new thing, but given the sheer breadth of information that we produce around the labour market, it's intentionally designed to be able to give you a sense of what is the most important information and how is it kind of thematically grouped together. On both of those, we'd definitely be keen for all of you, if you're able to have a bit of a play with them. We are keen for feedback. There's a feedback button on it, but we're also keen for any feedback that you have on either of those at labour.statistics. At abs.gov.au. And with that, questions?
Thanks, Bill. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Around
thank you. With regard to